Hey, what's good? What's good? We're back. Yours truly, one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast, a.k.a. Triple P, a.k.a. The Common Sense Podcast, your source for music, sports, politics, world events, and much, much more. I've been wanting to talk about this. This is a video of Colin Cowherd interviewing Sonny Vaccaro, where he explains the Michael Jordan's last shot versus Georgetown. And why he basically went after Michael Jordan to Nike and whatnot. And it's really good movie to watch. I recommend, if you haven't seen the Air movie, please go watch it. Even if you're a Michael Jordan hater, man, go watch it. All you LeBron lovers, go watch it. It is a very, very good movie. Chris Tucker is hilarious in it. Matt Damon does a good job. Ben Affleck. It's actually one of the, if I have to say the best movie that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck done together, it's the number one movie for me. And we're about to get into it.
Well, as I remember him, but there's a reason. So when I got my first job out of college, everybody, many of you know this, it was in Las Vegas. I was 22, 23 years old, and I worked for a TV station, KVBC. The late Jim Rogers owned it, Channel 3. And so I was this young, pesky sportscaster, a little smart alecky. I covered UNLV. Well, they were at the time exploding into a power. So Sonny Vaccaro was at practices regularly, and Sonny is now joining us for our TV viewers. And I knew you were a shoe guy, but I didn't understand the industry. I didn't know what the hell Nike was, or I knew Converse. Now, the story over the course of time, we didn't have the internet. Cable TV wasn't as pronounced. I just knew this guy was a shoe guy that was all over the country. And the players at UNLV absolutely loved him, and Tark loved him. And I knew when Sonny was at the practice, he was a big deal because of the way Tark would stop practice and run over to Sonny Vaccaro. So let's start with that. You had a lot of coaches that you were close to. I always felt like you and Tark, it was like brothers, the way you communicate. I honestly initially thought you were a relative. Were you and Tark close, as it appeared to me?
After I started my All-Star game, the Dapper Dan in 1965,
yeah.
I was 24 years old at that time, me and my boyhood friend Pat DeCesa in Pittsburgh. It was the first All-Star game 13 years before McDonald's even existed.
You created
first one
it.
In America.
Yep, you were 24.
And now I'm getting going, and I had no idea what was happening in a world other than I thought this game would work and kids would play in front of an audience. At that time, about the second year in, we became so successful because what I had were the best players in America. There weren't a lot of camps at that time. All the guys were, you know, whatever. And that's when I started meeting college coaches for the first time in my life. I had no connection with them prior to that in my life. I just thought I'm gonna do an All-Star game. Who came? And I thought it'd be local people and all that sort of stuff, to be very honest with you. Jerry Tarkanian came with his best friend, one of the boosters from Long Beach State.
Yeah.
He was at Long Beach then.
Yeah.
To see, you know, a couple kids that were in the thing. That's where I met him. And because I always, you know, I had good players and Jerry would come continuously, we formed this friendship because he was so different than anybody. And at that time, as you said, there was no internet, nothing. You knew your local teams. Very few people knew who existed in basketball, the players included, other than the local people. It wasn't on you didn't get a score right after they scored the basket. And, you know, there's not a running thing on your telephone.
Right.
So Tark was the most different person I've ever met in my life at the beginning.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, his personality, he was everyday coach. He was everyday person. He always was like that.
Kind of a blue collar regular guy.
He would talk to you if you had a gun in your hand, you know, and was threatening to shoot him, or if you had something to eat, you want to go get a free meal, which Tark also liked to do at that time. And
think about it. I got to pause that for a second. He would talk to you the same way if you got a gun in your hand pointed at him, as if y'all were about to go get a bite to eat. That sounds like a fearless individual. That sounds like a honey badger.
But But let's that's who he was. So we became good friends. And it transferred later on to, it got bigger. But the thing that changed everything was a kid named Raymond Lewis, a great legend. And they just did a documentary on Raymond. Raymond was the greatest high school player I ever saw at that time. At that time, ladies and gentlemen, it was the 60s, late 60s, early 70s.
I wasn't
70s
even born yet.
When this kid. Jerry was at Long Beach State. He was recruiting Raymond, and the world was. And he came in second place because he ended up another place that they made a better deal than Tark did at Long Beach State, okay? And on that day, the game I went to, you know, they actually beat Long Beach State, right. Raymond's team. From that day on, Tark and I became inseparable because the next job he took right after that loss.
UNLV.
UNLV.
Yep.
Now, I have gambled since 1963 when I was a kid out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
When I graduated, two friends of mine drove to Las Vegas so I can play poker at the Dunes, to be very, very honest with you. And coming from Pennsylvania at a young age, gambling was a part of our lives.
Sure.
And poker and playing and all that sort of stuff was it. Tark and I became inseparable because I spent half the year in Las Vegas and half the year in Pittsburgh getting ready for my Dapper Dan game. Yeah. I didn't really have a... I promoted the game. I represented a couple kids like George Gervin to go to the ABA.
Yeah.
I hustled, but it was all basketball.
You're a hustler.
Now I meet Tarkanian, and we're in Las Vegas. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this era may not even realize who Jerry Tarkanian was. Because there are a million impressions, but he was always the same man that he was at Long Beach State. Yep. When he was at junior college before he went to Long Beach
State. Short sleeve dress shirt.
But now he's at Las Vegas. Colin, now he's there. He has the world because Las Vegas in 1970s was Sin City. It was just all the mysterious things in life,
mafia.
All the things that everybody.
You heard what Colin just said, mafia. This is around the time when the mob ran Vegas. They had influence over pretty much everything. Let's keep it moving.
He wanted to do, but we're afraid to do.
Yeah.
Go to Las Vegas, we'll do him. Well, Tark, his backup team was the people who lived in Las Vegas and the guys who ran the town. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
You wanted to go to a restaurant, you wanted to do this, you wanted to go to Caesar's Palace, you went through Tark. Well,
yep.
I then knew a lot of kids.
Yeah.
That ended up playing, started from Sidney Green and that group, that
Pittsburgh
group of
kid.
Guys. I knew them perfect. You know, from my All-Star game, you know, all these things. We became inseparable. I also did the home games with with Chick Hearn some.
Yeah.
Then, you know,
you
Russ,
became an analyst.
Yeah. I go ahead.
Yeah. So the relationship with Tark was clearly dynamic, and that's where I knew you. So the movie is really, though, about the Jordan story.
Yes.
So there's a moment in the movie.
This is where it gets very, very interesting. Because 1982 was when Jordan hit this shot. I'm 44 years old now. I was 3 years old. So we're talking about literally 41 years of my life have went by and I did not know this one simple fact that they're about to talk about that really, it even makes it to me, it puts the cherry on the top for the GOAT conversation.
That's fascinating, where you're in a hotel room and you're trying to convince Phil Knight. Phil, Nike at that point had $250,000. They were going to sprinkle it to a bunch of players. And you had to convince Phil Knight.
Let me stop real quick. Think about it. $250,000. It was a lot in those times. But you got to look at the deals now. These dudes are getting like 100, 200, some of these cats, LeBron, $200 million deal with Nike, you know. They were talking about sprinkling $250,000 probably between four or five guys.
only way we can get Jordan, because we don't have Adidas money or Converse money. We got to give all our money to Jordan. So Jordan.
And Adidas was big because you had my Adidas, Run DMC, and Adidas was big in hip hop. Pumas was pretty kind of big somewhat then. Converse was definitely big. And Converse already had Bird, Magic, and Dr. J.
Jordan, you know, he plays at Carolina. He's kind of a wiry kid. He's obviously very talented. And there's a moment in the movie when you're watching the film and you're saying, on the shot of his career at Carolina, the shot's intended for him, not the best forward in college basketball, James Worthy. Dean Smith is choosing an 18-year-old freshman.
Let's go deeper than that. Not even... Not only was James Worthy the best forward in college basketball, he was the best player in college basketball according to the draft. He went number one overall the next year out of the draft. So not only he was considered not only the best forward, he was considered the best player in college basketball at that time. Big game, James Worthy. From my North Carolina Tar Heels, stand up.
Over his All-American superstar, is there some truth in that, or is it true?
Everything that Matt said was true. Everything that we talked about was true. The one thing
I believe
that,
it 1,000%
that happened in reality. I was at the game in person when they beat Georgetown.
Yes,
I was representing Nike. Georgetown, John Thompson, like Tarkanian was for me. One of my closest friends in the world. By then, John Thompson had taken care of, you know, the top. Yeah. He had, you know, Patrick Ewing had a great team. It was a great game. I'm sitting there watching this game.
Okay.
I'm rooting for Georgetown.
Sure.
Not, I don't give a damn about North Carolina or Michael Jordan or anybody.
Hold up, Sonny. That's blasphemy. You talking about if there should be any blasphemous statement on this planet is to say, I don't give a damn about North Carolina Tar Heels and Michael Jordan. And I get where he's coming from. His buddy was his friend was a Georgetown coach, but come on, man. Come on.
Nobody else. I never thought of him. I never knew Michael Jordan. I never met Dean Smith. And I certainly know that they wore Converse all their lives.
That's right.
So there was nothing. He hits the shot.
Yeah.
As God is my judge, what Matt was able to do on the screen, he did better than anybody could possibly do and help Sonny Vaccaro the rest of his life explain what happened. I remember that shot, that 18 seconds in my mind. I never thought about it again. I was never asked about it again until 2 years later when now we're recruiting Michael. Somewhere in my subconscious, that was the reason I said to Nike to bet everything on it. As you watch the growth of the movie.
It was your career, by the way.
All
right, think about this. This most people are under the impression that play was not designed for Michael Jordan to take the last shot in the 82 national championship in college as a freshman straight out of high school. You had a sophomore, Sam Perkins. You had a junior, James Worthy. And Sam Perkins stayed away. He was a senior, if I'm not mistaken. So most people are under the impression that was just like last resorts. Oh, nobody else was open. They couldn't get the shot. They couldn't get it to James Worthy. They couldn't get it to Perkins, who was labeled second best on that team at that time, especially by scoring average, if I'm not mistaken. Jordan only averaged like 12 points a game. But college, that's the thing. College is, it's funny like that. So people are under the impression that play was just like, all right, they went to Jordan because he was the last option, last resort. Everybody else was doubled. No. That play was designed for Jordan. And when you watch the breakdown in the movie and watch, like he said, when you watch how Matt Damon breaks it down, how relaxed Jordan was. I mean, Jordan was so relaxed. I mean, he could have called his mom's, took a bite of a hot dog, signed an autograph, and then grabbed the ball and shot it. That play, that was a design play. That was a design play. It was just, he was so relaxed. He was so confident. It was just like, it was like a free throw to him. It was really like a free throw to him. He was going to hit that shot probably 9 times out of 10. And the fact that Dean Smith, like, if anybody knows anything about Tar Heel basketball, Tar Heel basketball is designed the same way NBA basketball is. They went off of experience, rebounding, and defense. But the key word is experience, because experienced teams win in pros. It's always the teams that have superstars that have around 7 to 9 years in the league that lead their team. Nobody's leading their team to a championship at year two. Even when Magic Johnson came in the league, maybe Larry Bird did it. I don't even know if he won a championship year two. I got to check that. But Magic Johnson, even when he came in the league, was going to championships as a rookie. I mean, you had Kareem and all these other cats that you had the greatest scorer of all time was there. It wasn't Magic Johnson's team just yet. That's the thing. He wasn't the guy just yet. And Kareem was been in the league probably 12, 15 years, if I'm not mistaken by then. So Carolina is built on experience, like winning championships with guys that are like juniors and seniors. The fact that Dean Smith, not only, this is another thing people didn't, this is what people didn't catch on to. They didn't catch on to Dean Smith never starts freshmen. He never starts freshmen. And when I get off here, I'm going to go and look and see who was the next freshman he started after Michael Jordan. But Dean Smith typically doesn't start freshmen. And so people should have caught on to that right away. And then there was a guy who was supposed to be, I think, starting the year before, who transferred because he saw it too. Like, that's the thing. Dean Smith saw it. The guy who transferred saw it. Everybody in Carolina Tar Heels in that basketball program, they saw it. Even James Worthy said it out of his mouth. He was the best player on that team for all but 2 days or 2 minutes or 2 hours. Because as soon as Michael Jordan stepped on the court, he instantly knew this guy was different. Let's keep it moving.
You would have been wrong, and he's a bust. The Sonny Vaccaro, there's no air movie.
There's no air movie, and I don't know. I always believe I was good. And just to the audience.
Screw there's no air movie. How big is Nike? How big is Nike if Jordan actually went to Converse or Adidas? And the problem with the Converse one is Converse had Magic and Bird, who actually saved the NBA, and Dr. J. So Jordan was going to be fourth fiddle on that one. And then Adidas was not an American brand. They were not an American brand at all. And they weren't even sure of themselves, more or less sure of Michael Jordan. They just knew they didn't want nobody else to have him.
knows, I married Pam a month before I recruited him, so I would have been successful because I had a great backup and my wife, right?
So in the movie, yes. You go, and this makes Phil very angry.
Yes.
You decide, because Michael grew up a Converse and an Adidas guy, and you thought to yourself, rightly so, the only way we have a chance, we got to get a meeting with Michael.
And let's think about it. Why did Michael grow up a Converse and Adidas? Adidas because Michael Jordan liked Run DMC and hip hop, like a lot of us in North Carolina, and Converse because it was really the top brand for basketball, Magic Bird, Dr. J, which Dr. J is probably somebody who Jordan looked up to, I would think.
So you literally traveled, even though David Falk, who I know a little bit, I've interviewed, told you, don't you dare, because he represented Michael, don't you dare go and talk to the family, and you said, well, it's the only way I'm going to get him. So you traveled and you sit down with Michael Jordan's mother, who's a very strong woman, as we find out. Tell me, in the movie, it's portrayed that she doesn't give you a lot of time, but she does give you a visit. How long was that meeting with Michael's mother?
The meeting lasted long. It was a continuous meeting. Most of the talk and conversation with Michael's mother came after the first conversation. I didn't know Michael's mother until I had met Michael at Tony Roma's, you know, restaurant in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And when I met him, I then sensed that my first chance with this, I have to know the family. So on the phones, and there weren't, you know, cell phones, or there weren't, you know, the phones we have today, we get everybody in a second and have video and we know who know we're talking about. I talked to Mrs. Jordan on the phone. I arranged everything. Her and I gradually grew close together. The first scene you saw opened the door for me to know the Jordan family. So
right.
What you saw happened. It didn't exactly happen the way it's portrayed.
Right.
But I went through her, and at the end of the movie, you'll see how it all went. She did control it. So go.
Do you remember the moment, the very moment when she called you and said, because it was literally, it changed Nike as a company. It was a running company, not a basketball company. Do you remember where you were sitting, where you were at, the moment you were told Michael's coming?
That one's easier because, again, we were separated. She was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I was actually, I think Pam and I were living in California at that time, whatever.
Yeah.
I was home, and we had then had numbers, so we
right.
did communicate. Now, I hadn't heard from her for a minute or two, you know. The last I talked to anybody representing, you know, Phil Knight about Michael was at the Olympic Games in 84 in August, right here in California, right at the beach. And so we had talked to people because Phil at that time, in August of that year, still hadn't made.
Which is also where Isaiah Thomas first got a taste of Michael, and Bobby Knight told him, watch out for this one. He's different.
Made his mind up.
That's right.
Until when you watch in the film at the end, he comes in and, you know, he said, go for it. You know, we
so
made peace.
In the movie, what's fascinating is Phil Knight and you, it's a respectful relationship.
Yeah.
He knows you're good at what you do, and he's obviously a gifted man. But it does come across in it that there was a real struggle on this.
Yeah.
Is that true?
That's as true. You can make a bet on it today.
So yeah, Phil was very much, Sonny, who is this kid?
Yeah, and in reality, it went deeper because we only saw snippets, but it was constant. My life, Rob Strasser and Peter Moore, and obviously Phil, because Phil controlled whatever we did. I mean,
right.
There's no question about that. And that was an everyday occurrence. When you saw, and I didn't sleep on a couch up there, but I slept at home. It was 24 for me. That was my life. Now, we have the meeting. We're involved now. By August, we're pretty damn involved.
Yeah.
We got to get him there. When she says she's coming, it's a phone call.
The mom of
okay?
Michael, yes.
And we knew that she was coming. We knew that she would be there. But it still wasn't over. There was no signed contract. I think some people would be a little misled. Like, when they said they're coming out, that's what Falk was afraid of.
Right.
That she already committed. She came out because she made a commitment. And she listened to what I said because she held me to the wall on what I had said.
Yeah.
When I said, we're going to give you a piece, I only said it because Phil and Rob allowed me to say it. I didn't make that up my own self. I knew how much money, because the $500,000 eventually and the sharing of the profits.
Yeah.
I didn't create that, just for the record. But what I did was the messenger. I was the only one she talked to. I'm the one that promised her the money. And now I'm afraid. You remember the last scene where I don't know what the hell Phil's going to say. And then he says, you got it. I didn't know. Yeah. I really didn't know. I was praying, but
were you in the room? In the movie, there's a scene where there's a room, and it's you, and it's Phil, and it's Michael, and they start some goofy montage.
Yes.
And you turned it off because it was kind of clunking, and then you gave a pitch to Michael. Is that true?
That happened, but not as deep as what the film. Matt did a great job. The words he spoke, because Matt and I, we did a 90-minute, Zoom before I even met him personally when I came down here to watch the set. No, Matt researched Sonny, and his people researched Sonny. Most of everything he did, we talked about.
Yeah, so in the movie, folks, there's a moment when they have Michael at Nike. They're trying to get him to sign. They're making their pitch. I won't give too much away because I want you to watch the movie. But they have a presentation, and halfway through the presentation, Sonny decides, this ain't going well. I'm going to stop the film and sell Michael on his vision, which he is saying now is true. Again, I don't want to give too much away. It's a real moment in the movie. Now, yeah?
Can I say something?
You know what? I think what's also amazing about this story is the fact that Michael Jordan, as a rookie, was the first player to get a percentage of each sale of the shoes. It was like, his mom saw it, Dean saw it. But everybody else, the rest of us, we didn't really see it. I mean, I was always under the impression that Michael Jordan taking that last shot was just, nobody else was open. He was just the only one wide open. But if you notice, as soon as he got the ball, I got to go back and look, but he might have took one dribble and that's it. But I don't even know if he took a dribble. But he was shooting it regardless. He was shooting it regardless. I do believe that play was designed for him. I do believe that Dean Smith saw it from day one. Dean Smith is one of the greatest college coaches ever. I mean, they changed college basketball because of the four corners offense to him. He's the first coach to sign a black American athlete to a Division I school. Dean Smith was an innovator. They created the shot clock because of Dean Smith. They literally created the shot clock because of Dean Smith. After watching that movie, I was just convinced totally that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. He's the greatest of all time. It ain't even just about the 6-0. It's about a 18-year-old Michael Jordan having to play designed for him in a college championship game against Georgetown and Patrick Ewing. Knowing that Nike was betting the farm and look what it got him. That's the thing. This is what the American dream is about and American business and land of opportunity and all that. Like, and you got to be willing to bet the farm and bet it all on something that you truly believe is a guaranteed winner, whether it's a product, a service, or just betting on an athlete, something or someone that's a guaranteed winner. So they not only bet the whole brand on Michael Jordan, which they cast out like a cow. Literally, like, Magic Johnson, Dr. J, none of these cats are getting a percentage of the shoes. They're literally just only getting $200,000 a year. Michael comes and gets the $250,000 a year plus the percentage of the shoe sales. What does he do as a rookie instantly? 28 points a game. 28 points a game. I've looked at all most of the cats that averaged anywhere near Michael Jordan scoring. They came out in like the 50s and the 60s, man. There's nobody from the 80s really that came out averaging 28 points a game but Michael Jordan. And the closest thing in a modern day era after him was David Robinson at 22 a game. David Robinson has the second highest, you know, for like dudes from like 84 and on for a rookie. David Robinson was a beast, though. You got to realize David Robinson did like 2 to 4 years in the Navy. You know, he did like, I want to say 4 years in the Navy. And he was like a freaking bodybuilder, man. He was like a 7-foot bodybuilder playing basketball. But yeah, man. Michael Jordan's the GOAT, man. He's the GOAT. It's not just because he's 6-0. It's just how, like, he set the standards. He set the standards of extreme hard work in the NBA. I'm sorry, but Bird and Magic and cats like that, they weren't working nowhere near as hard as Michael Jordan was working. There's levels to this shit. There's levels to this shit. The only reason, think about it, the only reason LeBron James works as hard as he is because he wants to be like Mike. Everybody wants to be like Mike. Kobe, why did he work as hard as he did? Because he wanted to be like Mike. Why did Mike go 6-0? Because he worked harder than everybody else. He worked harder, man. Harder. And Mike's first game in the finals, he had 20-something points and over 10 assists. So he didn't just ball hog his first game into the finals. Mike excelled on the defensive end, was unstoppable on the offensive end. The only way Mike was having a bad night is if Mike was just having a bad night. Put up 20 points a game at age 40. If LeBron James is in the league at age 40, I'm going to bet that he's not putting up 20 points a game at age 40. He's, 36 right now, I think. Going on 37, maybe 38, 39. He won't even be in the league 4 more years, probably. I think as soon as his son, and if his son gets into the league, who knows? It's, you know, that's the thing. He might go to college and not even really be one and done material. Now, some team might give him a 2-way contract just because of his last name, but, you know, I don't think you should do that just because somebody got their last name is this, you know, just because he's LeBron James Jr. I mean, is he still going to actually be good enough to, you know, win and compete for a position on the team as well? Because I can tell you right now, these other players like Scottie Pippen's son and Tim Hardaway's son and Kenny Martin's son, they ain't getting no favoritism because of their last names and whatnot. But yeah, I think everybody needs to go watch the Air movie. Even if you're a Michael Jordan hater, it's just a good movie. It's really, the dialogue is really put together very well. Especially the parts with David Falk's cussing him out for going behind his back and seeing the family. It's truly, truly a really, really good movie. One of the best movies I watched in a long time, to be honest with you, man. One of the very best. And just knowing that last shot in the 82 championship was designed for Michael Jordan, a freshman straight out of high school. It's amazing. Once again, thank you for tuning in. Paul Pickett Podcast, and I'm out.